I'm Are You Serious? And this is my show.
Natural disasters, and eventually the end of the world.
Are you serious?
Violet Blue is everybody's favorite sex blogger, and we'll be talking to her about her new book about sex toys and anything else that pops up during our show. Jeff Deal is here twiddling some knobs. Steve Robles wearing a wool hat.
And also twiddling knobs.
twiddling some knobs under the table. And Diana Brown is back.
And glad to be here. And this week, I asked many people in San Francisco may well be. I'm a bit taken with the recent controversy involving an ABC anchor and KGO talk show host, Pete Wilson. Now, that's, of course, here on the local station in San Francisco. But apparently, Wilson made some on-air comments about San Francisco Supervisor Bevan Dufty and the mother of his new child, Sydney, the mother being Rebecca Goldfader. Now, for those who don't know, our dear Supervisor Bevan Dufty is a gay man, and the mother of his child is a lesbian, and they've decided to live together and raise this child. And Pete Wilson had some choice things to say about it that irritated many, many people. Even the mayor, Gavin Newsom, has weighed in, and at a press conference on the steps of City Hall, our Board of Supervisors here in San Francisco President, Aaron Peskin, stated that he feels Wilson having both a talk show and an anchor position creates a conflict of interest. He went on to say that KGO has a responsibility to deal with that conflict, and the way you deal with that is resignation. Now, many of the board members have called for Wilson's
head.
Wait,
what? It's
maybe
a,
on a plate.
A conflict because it's a radio show and a TV show?
It's horse shit is what
I don't know that. I don't know that
that's
I...
That's the most fucking...
It's a big load of
that I like that little thing. I mean, why not? It just means he's a successful individual within his demographic, but...
They had to find some way of punishing him without saying they're against free speech.
Yeah, exactly. That's how do we circumvent that?
Why don't they just say, I mean,
thing?
You know...
It's ridiculous.
Why don't they just say?
And, why don't they just say we are against free speech? I mean, obviously Pete Wilson is a jackass, but
right.
The bigger issue is the fact that I mean I always come back to assuming that liberals are for free speech. I forget over and over again, and they never fail to surprise me because
they are against
free speech
unless
period.
It directly goes against what they believe, in which case. They tend, you know, there's a lot of people that feel like there's the fascist left.
I should just say, actually, more like the political activists and the politicos. I think most people who call themselves liberals probably are for free speech, but the politicos.
Well, agenda pushers of any kind tend to want people to.
Yeah, people who are engaged in propaganda, they have to counter what they consider as, you know, the opposing propaganda. And part of the way you do that is to, whatever, you know, stifle the opposition. And,
well, it's just a big, giant harumph, you know. He just, you know, he knows that he has to harumph. So that's just him doing a harumph. I mean, he could have, like, he needs to go back to the woodshed on that harumph, though, because...
Well, I mean, they can harumph without calling for his head. They can say,
well,
you know...
Let's talk about what Wilson actually said.
Well, he basically, you know, he said a lot of things that he apologized for the context, for his language, saying his language is inappropriate.
Apologies are bullshit too, but let's go.
He went on to say, you know, it was talk radio sarcastic cheap shotting, but the biggest point that he seemed to be making was that he supports same-sex marriage, adoption for same-sex couples and singles, but his big deal is that the couple has
use
no...
of a turkey baster. Doesn't like that.
Actually, he said that wasn't even his problem, that they had no romantic attachment.
No, that's my artful way of putting it.
Yeah, okay, all right. Basically, yeah, he wanted it to be made in an old-fashioned way, I guess, from mom's recipe.
Yeah, as if that holds any romantic attachment.
But here's what I want to know. I mean, romantic attachment is a hella loose little category.
Yeah.
So let's say you have a couple people that hook up for a one-night stand. They indeed have
a
romantic
attachment. They can make a baby real easy.
But are those people going to be like the parents you want raising, you know, the future legions of
Americans? Hey, wait a minute. Isn't romantic attachment a euphemism for dildo? dildo?
Well, he doesn't have anything against single parents adopting, so that brings some questions to mind, doesn't it?
You can't make babies with a dildo, though, I don't think.
No, not unless a turkey baster is inside of it.
So basically, I mean, Pete Wilson is complete.
Wait a minute, you can make babies with a dildo. Didn't Pete Wilson create some kids?
Oh, or would that just be considered talk radio sarcastic cheap-shotting? I don't know, Steve,
I
but
hope
it's amusing.
So.
It comes down to, like, you know.
So these sweet people.
These charming people
decided to raise a baby together.
And he finds.
And we can assume that they'll probably do as good a job as anybody else because they're.
What defines a loving or attached relationship?
Britney Spears and Kevin Federline. That's what defines romantic, attached relationship. And I'm sure they're doing a much more wonderful job at raising a child than Bevan Dufty and,
Well, you know, he went on to snark and say, oh, you'll be much better parents if all that silly emotional stuff doesn't get in the way. So, Pete, you know, perhaps you'd be a much better newscaster if all that silly emotional narrow-mindedness didn't get in the way. But I'm sorry. Once again, is that just cheap talk radio sarcastic cheap-shotting?
I hope so.
I think, we should slap Pete Wilson around, but we should...
Do it lovingly.
But we should let him say whatever... This thing about
I
people.
I think we should have
enough
Dennis
with apologies.
And
no
Wilson
more apologies. If somebody has something to say,
say it.
Then we get all politically correct and we make them apologize. It's like Maoism.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if they said it, then let them
hang their words.
Hang them on their words. Don't make them apologize.
No, I love the
besides, does it really change it if you apologize?
My words were somehow twisted. My words, I hate homos, somehow got twisted by the media into assuming that I hate homos.
I apologize for what Steve just said.
Thank you.
Violet Blue is the award-winning author, editor of a dozen sex books, a sex columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle's SF Gate, a correspondent for Geek Entertainment TV, and she's been messing around with dangerous explosives with Survival Research Labs for many long years. And her latest book is The Adventurous Couple's Guide to Sex Toys, published by Cleese Press. So welcome, Violet, welcome back, a return guest.
Yes, hi.
Our second return guest. I think Eric Davis has been back, and now you are
returned. You're
an elite company.
Excellent. Or I should say we're an elite company.
Yeah, so before we get into your books, you have this weekly column on SF Gate, which is a website of San Francisco's mainstream daily newspaper, San Francisco Chronicle. And
yes.
So how shocked should America be by this column? How shocking is it?
It's fairly shocking, actually.
So say you're like in Iowa.
Oh, yeah. I'm getting mail from them, actually.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I'm getting mail.
I'm sure.
Love letters from the square states. Yeah. It's utterly adorable being told that I should be locked up and thrown away without a key and that I should crawl back into the little hole I came from. And
they all say the same things.
They
sounds kinky.
It is. It's kind of hot, actually. It's giving me lots of ideas. No.
And they say Met America doesn't have it going on.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. No, it's interesting. I never really quite received hate mail until I started writing for the Chronicle. And now I'm receiving hate mail from really conservative people. And
I want to write for the Chronicle. I had a column for the Examiner for about 6 months, the Fang Examiner. I got no hate mail. I got nothing, really. Nobody gave a fuck.
I got nothing.
Nobody was reading it.
That's probably why. Censor your mail.
Well, of course, it's like they see sex, so they're going to click on it, right? Whether or not it offends them. And that's what gets them in the door with my column. And then
they're hoping to be offended.
Yes.
Exactly. Oh, please offend me. You know, if that's your fetish, that's great. And you've definitely come to the right place. But I'd say I haven't written about anything particularly shocking, although I am writing about sex in San Francisco. So, and we're definitely in a bubble of having a really, really large and extremely articulate and widespread sex culture here. So, well, one column I wrote about having beer with sex educators at an old man bar on Market Street, I did joke about the fact that we joke about bestiality and necrophilia,
right.
I mean,
and then
to us, that's kind of funny, but, you know, to people in Iowa,
it's all about context.
They're like, oh my God, they're having sex with dogs in San Francisco in a bar. And it's like, No, wait.
Now, but isn't joking about necrophilia pretty much a mainstream thing? I don't know. I'd have to. I bet if I watched TV for an entire night, like if I watched Comedy Central for an entire night, I would find somebody joking about necrophilia.
Almost certainly. I think it's like in every episode of South Park. That's funny. So it's like.
We're going to have a watch now, a Comedy Central Necro watch.
Yeah. We're going to get Violet Blue off the hook here by proving to Middle America that she's not bringing up anything that actually isn't done by United States senators or members
Absolutely.
Of the House of Representatives.
They've definitely done more transgressive things than I have.
I would guess that whoever is the head of the committee against necrophilia is probably the number one necrophiliac.
Definitely.
Once working for a small publication, we were interviewing somebody put on swingers parties, and she was very clear to say that the majority of these things happened at, like, you know, hotels by the airport out in mid-America, more so than, you know, in the depraved coasts, as people would think.
Yeah, well, the informal statistics that I've seen, for the most part, state that most of the people who participate in the swinging lifestyle and also purchasers of sex toys tend to err on the Republican and Christian side. So, yeah, and some of the largest states.
Well, I think that's because hipper people are just less formal. I mean, the whole idea of swinger has kind of a Midwestern tone
that's
to
true.
It.
That's kind of a
60s. Little old school.
Aw, I know, give them a cookie. It's so cute.
I just think of people swinging around. I can't get beyond the whole word of swing.
It's like, that's nice.
Well, I do definitely have some interesting and antagonistic things planned for the column coming up. So,
okay, can you give us a hint?
A taste?
I can. Well, the last week of this month is the beginning of Protection from Porn Week, which is Morality in Media's like little war on porn week, where they do as much as they can to educate people about the dangers of pornography. And so I have a couple of columns planned around celebrating that particular week in a wholly different way. So
feeding their being offended fetish, I guess.
Think so. Well, in a way, it's like fishing with dynamite, right?
So, but, I mean, is there a sort of a form of prophylaxis against porn that you could approve of? I mean, you do tell us what good porn and bad porn is. So
certainly. Well, I'm definitely in a war against bad porn.
Are you?
So hopefully, helping out Morality and Media in their cause, I can point people toward good porn, better porn.
I wonder if that would make them feel a little bit better about things.
Maybe.
I don't think.
I kind of doubt it.
I don't think.
Again, it's their fetish.
So, I mean, the fact that you have this column, not actually in the paper itself, but on their website, is that controversial? Is there any internal politics in the Chronicle that you can talk about?
From my understanding, well, my understanding is from my experience so far. And so far, it's kind of like working for a cokehead. In that,
are you talking about Phil?
No. Phil. Oh my God, no. Phil is cool. Actually, is really cool, which is amazing. I didn't expect him to be such a cool guy. Right. But no, I mean the institution itself. Right. It's just like they really want to do this thing with me, but then they kind of freak out at the last minute. Someone up high freaks out and is like, "Oh my God!" And they pull all my links, or you know, like my column went up last week. And they had originally not linked to me or anything, any of the links in my column, which is weird because it's a web column, right?
Right.
And then the next two columns, like the next column was like, they put a couple links in. And then the next column, they put all my links in and linking to my site. And then 2 days later, they yanked the link from my bio to my site. So now I'm like, okay, what's going to happen with the next column? So it's
so random.
It seems like there's some sort of war of ideology going on there, where it's like they want a little, like, they want the hint of sex or the hint of cool or the hint of hip or the blogger, like, because I'm also the token blogger, right? That's coming in and doing.
Well, this
thing
is, this is the whole story of corporate America. They're always coming and saying we want edgy,
but not too edgy.
They don't really. They just want something that looks
they want the
edgy.
Aura of
fashionable.
It. Yeah, exactly. Without actually making the commitment to this is what it means, and also in a way too, this is how we need to behave on the internet. You know, so.
Mm-hmm. And your column was advertised illicitly. Do tell us about the our friends in the Billboard Liberation Front. Not your friends, of course.
Just the friends that
you're
are out
innocent
there.
Of all.
I had no idea actually that this was even happening, and I got like a grainy phone cam pic in the middle of the night sent to me, and I was like, this has got to be like a Photoshop job. And then when I woke up in the morning, and it was the morning after my column had launched, I got an email from someone in the Chronicle building that said, I can see you from my desk, 7 times life size. And I was like, what? You know?
do tell our audience what this is, because they might not know.
Oh, the billboards?
Yeah.
Apparently in the middle of the night, or prior to that, I don't know when, but apparently at some point from my column going live, Thursday, like Wednesday evening, Thursday to Friday, a group of individuals went out and had printed pictures from my website, not just pictures from my blog, but like a couple of somewhat explicit photos from like my explicit photo galleries, and made them like put them into that made them look like ads that the SF Gate and Chronicle had done. Right. So they looked like bus stop ads and bus shelter ads. And put them all over the place. As far as I know, I got pictures from different things. I did see one on the side of a bus. So
they
bus.
Wow, they did a hell of a job.
That's incredible.
I wonder if the bus was moving at the time they were changing it.
The photo that someone showed me was from a bus in motion from the bus stop. And I was
that's
just like,
amazing.
Oh my God. And I had no idea this had happened. It was a complete and total surprise. I had no idea who did it until I went and found one at 5th and Mission. And at the bottom it said billboardliberationfront.com. And what's weird about that is that that's not actually the URL for Billboard Liberation Front.
Hmm.
So is somebody pranking on the Billboard Liberation Front?
There are sometimes copycats for the BLF. But I don't know, because there was no statement was issued, yet no denial was issued on the
site.
What
is at that site?
What's that?
What is it at that address, at that URL?
Nothing.
Nothing.
It's not even a site.
Let's grab it.
I think their site is billboardliberation.com is their actual URL. It was interesting, though.
Did they get rid of them real quick? I mean,
they were gone fast.
They did a good job of
the one at 5th and Mission was gone like very quickly. I was really glad I went down and saw that one. And then there was another one at Castro Market that stayed up for 2 days.
I missed them. Are they on your website? Do you have them posted there?
I do. Yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
So you can see where my boobies were all over Market Street. I was just like,
they must be big.
Oh God, they were huge.
We certainly create dialogue.
No.
I don't get
excited. They're not that big.
Because I can only cover a small part of Market Street.
It's not the size of Market Street you can cover. It's just the neighborhood you choose to cover, are you?
Indeed. Indeed.
Right. Let's break for a couple of minutes and hear some sexy, sexy, sexy music. And come back and talk to Violet Blue.
Are you serious?
This is from The Smart Girl's Guide to Porn by me, Violet Blue, and these are common concerns about content. Everyone has concerns about porn, and many smart girls, like me, run up against these concerns when they want to watch porn. They are stopped or their arousal is derailed by their concerns about content. Some women will put in a DVD, see something that offends or upsets them, hit the eject button, and never experiment with porn again. While it's true that everyone has concerns and that there's probably something out there to offend everyone, most people don't know that their concerns can help them select the right video or website and that the viewing choices in porn are many. One concern is if porn can make you do things. Porn can't make you do anything. If you're new to the world of porn, feeling afraid or unsure or feeling morally at question with an aspect of sex, it can bring up powerful feelings. Adding any new sexual behavior to your life can feel like a make-or-break situation, and sometimes it is. And porn touches on many issues that can be intense. Much like old myths that masturbation will make you go blind or grow hair on your palms, myths once intended to scare people away from exploring what we know is a healthy sexual practice, a few modern myths exist about people who watch porn. People who watch porn are compulsive masturbators. Masturbation is normal. Everyone masturbates, and people who watch porn have a range of masturbation practices, just like everyone else. We live in a culture that labels anyone who enjoys masturbation as compulsive, despite the normalcy of this perfectly healthy human behavior. People who watch adult videos are porn addicts who can't enjoy sex without on-screen stimulation. It's quite true that some people can become habituated to certain stimuli, especially when they discover something that works well, such as a frequent erotic fantasy, a pet vibrator, or a favorite sexual position. When you find something that you really like, or that brings you reliable enjoyment to sex, repeat use does not mean you are addicted to it, though if you'd like to change your masturbation habits or broaden your range, you can adopt new practices. Another hurtful myth is, people who watch porn are child molesters, or watching porn turns people into rapists and child molesters. People who molest children are interested in children, not adult porn. Those interested in sexualizing underage kids will be much more interested in watching movies that feature young children than masturbating to images of explicit adult sex. Adult porn is a voluntary arousal tool like sexual fantasy, the imagination, erotic books, sex toys, to name a few. They lack the power to make anyone do anything they do not already want to do. Another hurtful myth is, only people who can't have a real relationship watch porn. This is one of the most hurtful myths, designed to shame people into sexual isolation. Retail statistics chart the skyrocketing sales and rentals of porn to couples, showing that couples as well as unpartnered individuals are using porn to enhance their relationships or to find release in between relationships. Some choose solitary pleasure, and porn provides a great release from sexual tension. Besides, taking time out to masturbate when you're in a relationship isn't cheating, it's taking care of yourself. And this is, after all, the film genre that brings you such titles as Bat Dude and Throbbin', Shaving Ryan's Privates, and Terrors from the Clit.
So, when I was reading the part of your book about women being turned on by visuals...
Right.
I can believe that. I mean, I think I believe that. But I...
I've just never seen it.
No, that's the thing.
Are we back to your billboard now, are you?
Most women will say, I think, that, oh, I'm not really, you know, porn doesn't do it for me. And certainly there, you know, the mainstream media repeats that over and over again, that, and even scientists, like mainstream science,
sure,
kind
sure.
of says, you know, it's just a simple evolutionary fact for whatever reason, men are more turned on by visual imagery. But there have been a few, you know, instances in my experience where I've been with girls and watched porn and could clearly tell that they were, you know, affected by it. In a
right.
good way. So I was wondering, do you think that a lot of the difference between either the perception or the reality of women versus men being affected by visual imagery has to do with maybe the taboo of it? You know, like women are more resistant to accept it in themselves because of the fear of, you know, the being perceived as a slut or something, you know.
Interesting. Okay. I think there are a couple of different answers to that question. But what you're reminding me of is actually I recently did an interview with the guy who is the editor-in-chief of Playboy magazine, the print magazine Playboy. Remember that thing?
I do.
Yeah.
Sure.
And
I used to read that.
See, everyone used to,
read it?
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Good interviews. Sorry.
So he wanted to talk to me he wanted to feature this book, my book, in Playboy Advisor, I think, of November or something like that, something that's coming out in the future. And for some reason, he wanted to talk to me on the phone, which for me is always a really old-fashioned way to conduct an interview. But I was like, sure, I'll talk to this dude, right? Plus, he's like the editor of Playboy, and I'm like, this is kind of novel. And we got in a half an hour-long argument about whether women are turned on by visual imagery or not. And I thought just in and of itself, it was a really telling argument for me to be having with this guy who was in charge of this magazine, right? This very dated magazine that a lot of people often voice complaints about. And one of the things that he kept bringing up, it was actually a very constructive argument, and I was really surprised to have him quoting back passages from my own book at me. He'd read my book. I was like, whoa. And one of the things that he kept throwing back at me as part of the argument was this biological imperative, you know, that women wouldn't be interested in, you know, anything that would bring them sexual pleasure outside of anything that would, you know, cause them to promote their biological imperative to breed and have babies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really common mainstream argument when it comes to women and sexual pleasure.
That's a very extreme interpretation of Darwinian.
Think? Yeah.
Biology. I mean, there are distinctions between the sexes, but that's a very extreme interpretation.
Definitely, definitely. Well, and I think that, and to go back to the question that you answered, I think that, or that you asked, one of the things that I encounter regularly, because obviously my Smart Girl's Guide to Porn is for women, and it's written toward sort of a newcomer audience to porn, which most women tend to be a newcomer audience to porn, whereas guys kind of grow up with porn, and women really don't. I mean, every guy you talk to, and I'm going to make a generalization here, you know, it's like, oh yeah, dad's Playboys, or, you know, my older brother's porn stash, or, you know, and so guys kind of grow up already with language about it before they even hit 18, and women kind of don't really get that growing up, and we also don't get sort of like a cultural acknowledgement or even an acknowledgement between our peers about, you know, what's hot to jack off to. You know, it's like we don't even talk about that as definitely young women, and you know, and so, you know, we come to the table like, you know, if you and I are the same age, your experience with porn is going to be much more advanced than mine, just because of the way that our genders are acculturated in our culture. So,
but
that's,
I mean,
part
of why. Do you think there's any tendency whatsoever? I mean, the myth or the belief is that women prefer to like read stories and men just get caught over a picture.
Well, it's context. I mean, when you grow up and you're not used to visual imagery, like explicit sexual imagery. I mean, for instance, like, okay, I got sex ed in school, like, but I grew up in California schools. And so most of the people in the nation, especially now for the past 5 years, you can only get abstinence education in public schools right now. But people who did get sex ed, it's awful. Yeah, and people who do get any sex ed in schools, they only get, it's reproductive education. Like, it's all about how babies are made, and it's all illustrated, and it's all illustrated cutaways of genitals. You never see actual genitals. You never see actual, you know, real genitals until you see porn.
Well, when I was in school, they didn't have sex ed at all, basically.
Right, right. So your sex ed came from porn. Yeah, sure. Everybody's
Does. And speaking of sex education, I mean, I think, you know, most males, like you were kind of hinting at, they get their sex education about how to be sexual mostly from porn and then what R-rated films you can sneak into or something. You know?
Right.
But what do you think, just to try to get you to play devil's advocate, advocate against yourself, with the internet, kids, much younger boys are seeing much more extreme pornography that is pretty much sexist, as you would, you know, I mean, mainstream porn mostly is what you find for free on the internet.
Oh, totally, totally. It's super dated gender stereotypes and Barbie bodies and all that bullshit.
What do you think is the possible negative effect of that on, like, how boys learn about their own sexuality? Then?
Okay, well, first let me...
Especially, you know, with the conservatism that seems to be preventing any kind of real sex ed going on in schools.
That's true. Well, first... before you make me play devil's advocate to myself, I'm going to say the positive things about that.
Okay.
And that's that it's not only that I'm not going to just talk about kids, but it's not just people that are getting more of a porn education because of what's readily available on the internet. It's girls, too. And women are being allowed to sort of, like, individuate their choices and their sexuality by being able to sort of, like, shop a little bit for visual stimulation on the web and get exposed to it and be like, I like that. Ooh, I hate that. I like that. I hate that. So that's the positives, is that people are getting a little bit more... They're getting more tools to be able to individuate their sexuality just by the fact that there's Google image search, you know? And there I said it. But as far as the negatives go, I think that there's a lot of educating and a lot of consumer advocacy that needs to be done about porn that's out there and good porn and informing people about finding the good porn. And I think that that's the type of information that needs to be out there, because there are so many racist, sexist, you know, really, you know, jackass type displays of sexuality, things that you should never try at home, you know, that are on the internet, that are in quote-unquote mainstream porn practices. I mean, these people are trained athletes to do a lot of the shit that you see them do, you know, and like, you know, regular adults shouldn't even be trying some of this stuff at home, because it's really unhealthy. Like, that's the type of education and information that needs to get out there, because there are going to be a lot of negative effects, because... You know, no one's going to be talking to these kids. I mean, STD rates among teens are skyrocketing right now because of this, you know, the abstinence education. It's, like, ridiculous. So people do need to be talking about it, but obviously no one's talking about anything relating to healthy sexuality in regards to pleasure at all in a public forum whatsoever. So yeah, there are going to be some negative things coming from it for sure, but there's also hopefully going to be a lot more people like me putting accurate information out there about it, so... We'll see. Sites like Scarlatine are really good for kids, like just to learn about healthy sexuality and individuating their own choices and things like that. So it's a start.
So as well as having a guide to good porn, do you ever thought about having a guide to bad porn? Like,
that sounds like a great article for Ten Zen Monkeys, actually.
will you do that?
Sure. Okay. I'd love to.
Great. Well, you did talk about your somewhat of a crusade against bad porn. So
absolutely.
I think being able to delineate the good and the bad would be quite useful.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit more about bad porn. I mean, obviously, stereotypical.
There's so much bad porn. Oh, well, let's see. Where do you begin with bad porn?
How about Evan Stone? Can we just narrow it down to Evan Stone?
Thank you very much.
Who I actually called the Bruce Campbell of B-level porn.
He's not even that good.
Yeah.
I would do Bruce Campbell. That's the thing. I mean, come on. Evil Dead 2. But Evan Stone is like the Chippendales dancer that got lost somewhere and they found him. And then, he's just like long hair. Like, he looks like a Chippendales dancer. It's disgusting. And he's in every fucking porn movie.
And there's that one look that he does that's just really, like, disturbing.
If only you could see Steve Robles right now
imitating Evan Stone.
Alright, wait a second. Give my audience some context here for those who don't know who this fellow is.
Evan Stone is a porn performer who has been in a lot of porn movies for the past several years, and he's in a lot of like the big name porn movies
too. So what does he look like? What color is his hair?
Blondish brown, like dirty blonde, and it's usually about shoulder blade length or waist length. I mean, he really does look like the Lost Chippendales dancer, and he's just like, you know, like
Fabio's standard,
overly, yeah, he's like, it's like overly waxed. Yeah, it's like got the lantern jaw. He's completely overly waxed. And
he's in a lot of those softcore porn movies also that
they
show on Showtime.
Yeah, he does some of the late
Showtime
cable ones. Yeah, for sure.
I've seen the guy, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of guy, and I he may be nice, I don't know, but I'm just saying he's the kind of guy where girls like me look at it and we're like, okay, where are all the hot guys in porn? You know, and why is it the same guy over and over again?
Gay porn, isn't that where they all
are? That is the short answer of where the hot guys are.
Well, I like that part of your book where you talk about a lot of girls renting gay porn just because the guys are so hot.
It's true. I see it in the Castro all the time.
Sure.
It is true.
I'm never the only woman in the gay porn section. It's
and
awesome.
Laugh their heinies off. I love it.
Yeah. Well, I hear them exclaim, oh my God, these guys are so hot.
Exactly.
Like, no.
That's why women haven't been going for visual porn.
Absolutely.
They needed to find out that the gay porn was the place to go.
It is. It is. Well, the guys are hotter and there's actual sexual of male bodies. Like mainstream porn is really, really homophobic, and its depictions of male sexuality are really negative for the most part. And gay porn, they're just like, woohoo, look what I got, it's fun, let's play with it. And women like me who like guys are like, woohoo, yay, let's play with it, you know. So
well, I'm afraid we have to go, but Violet Blue will be back with us next week. Actually, it'll be in a few minutes, and we'll be talking to her more about good sex and good porn and bad sex and bad porn.
Thank you.
Love is the only weapon. Shit!
Are you serious?